Hi, this is Mark Waid, writer of Daredevil, and you're listening to Longbox Heroes.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 331 of Longbox Heroes. I'm Joe, joined by Todd. Todd, how are we doing today?
I am amped up, sir.
Any reason you're so amped up today?
I'm getting ready for a lot of podcasting. My brain is so filled with information for this week's podcast, it actually hurts. My neck is straining under the weight.
They need to sell some sort of supports that you would wear on your shoulders that would hold your giant head up.
It is, because it's my monster brain. What I need now is the Mr. Burns mind eraser ray gun.
Okay.
Or as he calls it, the 38.
What an invention.
Yep.
But no, we actually do have a lot to talk about this week. We have a ton of stuff to talk about in the news. Whether it be fast food tie-ins with superheroes, sad news regarding legendary comic creators, and two Doctor Who stories? What show is this?
I was going to say, how did that slide in? How did you let that happen?
I don't know. Somebody must have been asleep at the switch. I hope someone gets fired over this.
Let it be me. I need a rest.
We also have a little bit of convention news, digital sales and freebies, what we read from this past week, which is going to include Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps number 13, Flash number 15, and we're going to tread lightly, but we are going to discuss Saga number 42 from last week as well.
Still sad.
What we're looking forward to coming out this week, as well as the return of TV Talk, as both the Flash and Legends of Tomorrow are back. And we're also going to discuss in Todd and Joe Have Issues, Daredevil number 360.
That's a full plate right there.
Oh, boy. I'd hate to have to record an After Dark after this.
Oh. Don't we have to do that?
So, let's get into the news here, sir. One of the stories that you sent to me, because you had some remarks to make about this.
Right.
I guess social media tries to cater themselves to different pop culture things. Like, you'll see things like Wendy's all of a sudden, like, whoever is controlling the fast food Twitter that week decides, like, hey, we're wrestling fans, so we're going to tweet at, like, Matt Hardy about his broken brilliance and, like, hey, don't forget to buy crispy nuggets or something. Or, like, you know, they try to cater it to the young folks with, like, some sort of pop culture-y things.
Right.
Well, Arby's took it to the next level this past week to promote their new fish sandwich, where they had a guy, like, dressed up as Aquaman eating the fish sandwich.
Yeah, you don't see his face, though, but from the neck down, he's Aquaman eating a fish. And the tweet was, he doesn't talk to fish. Apparently, I guess he eats fish.
Right.
That's what I gather from it. And I have this little, like, I have this thing where if you're a fast food or a food tie-in, not counting stuff you get in the grocery store, because that's completely different, I will try whatever you have. I ate the Thing Burger. Granted, I still have health issues from it, from Denny's. But I'm going to try a fish. I'm going to try a fish patty.
You're going to go and try the King Hawaiian Fish Deluxe?
Yes. Next week, I will give a Hawaiian Fish Patty King Deluxe review on this show.
Write that down.
Okay.
Write that down. I thought this was funny.
Uh-huh.
Only because, and this used to be a thing that they would have on TV all the time. Maybe TV. I'm sure they exist on YouTube. But how they talked about how the food that they would show you in commercials wasn't actually the food.
It had to be the food. Well, the thing you were selling, it had to be.
Well, no. Like, they would always do, like, oh, well, so that the mayonnaise would really pop on camera, we would use, like, Elmer's glue. Or we would prop up the back of the sandwich to make it look fuller, or things like that.
Right.
Whereas this photo looks like it's legitimately a fish sandwich that looks like legitimate bread. It looks like not a I guess what would be like
wax. It's not like wax.
Right,
food.
Right, right. Now I will say this. I would have loved to have been there for the photo shoot on this, just mm-hmm. to see who had to drain the grease off of those curly fries.
What? Whoa.
Once you lay
it.
Curly fries down on any sort of anything, the grease just seeps out all over them. And that piece of paper in this picture has absolutely no grease on them. So I call shenanigans there.
What? The clearer the paper, the greasier the food, right? That's
right.
The rule?
But right. If you're worried about whether or not something is going to help you gain weight, rub it against a piece of paper. If the paper turns clear, it's your window to weight gain.
Well, how greasy is this food? Let me rub it on this wall.
I don't know. And again, I don't know, Bart. Fish sandwich. And it clears out an entire wall.
I don't know. It's not, at least it's not the clogger. If you find an unhealthier sandwich anywhere, you're in Russia.
So yes, this was inspired tweeting here from the old Arby's. Good on them. And let me go to their Twitter to see if there's any response tweets that I could read on air.
That's, well, there should be. I mean, that's Aquaman eating Arby's food.
People claiming it's Mermaid Man, trying to be funny.
Is that a thing?
Yes. Another man who, a lot of people lamenting that they don't get a chance to eat Arby's due to various reasons, whether being in other countries. Someone else saying very few people will get this because they don't. No one reads DC Comics.
Oh boy, the Marvel fanboy.
Yeah, you ain't kidding, partner.
Was that you?
No. I am very surprised on how there is, like, no people saying anything untoward. Like, this appears to be a positive exchange between, a corporation online and people who have the internet.
What? That's unheard of.
Listen, Todd, I'm scrolling through a lot more of these comments. I apologize. There has to be someone in here who decided to, like, call some sort of person an ethnic slur or something like that.
About their sexuality or something.
Right.
But 2 days ago, there was a Arby's tweet, a wrestling-related one.
Ooh, there was.
Yeah, there was. There's a Arby's sandwich with the cherry belt from WWE, the cherry flavored one behind it that says 30 men enter, but only one man eats. # Royal Rumble.
There you go. I do see that. My friend Andy actually said that his wife went and he made his wife go pick one up for him so he could eat it while watching the Royal Rumble.
Oh boy.
Oh boy. And I see a lot of, and again, I give Arby's, you know, cause they don't just simply be like, oh, and this, I want to say, I don't typically eat Arby's. But I, whatchamacallit, the, they're not a sponsor of the show.
But they should be.
Well, they should be because a lot of their,
fan base?
No, a lot of their tweets while catering to, popular culture sort of things, they're not just lazily being like, oh, something, something, catchphrase, buzzword, you know?
Mm-hmm.
They're like, oh, here's a stop motion video that we made of a bunch of chicken fingers done up like the Power Zord or Megazord from Power Rangers combining together to form the Megazord.
Oh boy, does that really happen?
Yes! Or here's a bunch of cards that we made that go into the Munchkin game that are Arby's themed that we made. You know, so like they're like whoever's in charge of this, I say kudos to you. You're working hard.
He got us to mention it
right on
our show. Now all the fans of this show we're gonna run out and buy Arby's. If you do, tell them we sent you.
Right. Listen, that's why I had you write that down.
Mm.
So Maple, in much sadder, Maple. Less roast beef news.
Or is it less curly news?
Less roast beef news. Okay. Legendary comics artist Bernie Wrightson announced the other day that he is going to be retiring. And
yes.
Sadly, it's due to, you know, just his health has caught up with him, and he's just no longer able to produce the work at the quality that he sees fit to be able to produce. I know he's done some things here and there for DC, but most recently he did that Frankenstein... What was it? Frankenstein Unleashed?
Yes, it was a mini, which was the sequel to his Frankenstein. Well, he didn't write Frankenstein.
But you get what I'm saying.
Right. He illustrated a Frankenstein novel, which is one of the, if you can find a copy, is one of the most beautiful things you will ever see in your entire life. Mm-hmm. And so he did this as kind of a sequel to that, and I really enjoyed it. And I don't think it ever finished. I think he got sick a while back, and it was supposed to be like 4 or 5 issues, and only 2 or 3 ever came out.
Right, and it just, you know, not to get into too much of it, but, you know, it was put publicly on his Facebook page that he's been in the hospital, he's had another brain surgery, he's unable to essentially function on his left side, and he's canceled any future, you know, art assignments or convention appearances and so forth. But they said that other than that, he is, you know, healthy. Other than that, he is in good condition.
Right. 68 years old, and probably best known for creating Swamp Thing.
Right. Who we talked about Swamp Thing a couple episodes ago here on Todd and Joe Heavy Issues.
We did.
And he's got a very unique style, a very style unto himself that you don't really see a lot of other people able to replicate.
No.
Would be a good way to say it. And under normal circumstances, and he is a very heavy ink guy, and a lot of times heavy inks I'm not a big fan of, but his heavy inks work so good for his art.
Oh, he can relay a mood in his art. That's the one thing that I will give you. And I'm not trying to be, you know, over the top about it, but like his, like when, if you could find, I'll have to see if I can find it and send it to you. There's a huge print or a picture of Frankenstein's laboratory.
Yes.
And it's ridiculous. Like it took him a year to draw. It's not something that it was like, oh, I banged this out. It's ridiculous. So just an amazing artist.
It's when art was art, man.
That's right. When did it become a business?
Oh, I got to whip that out on someone the other day.
Did you?
Yes. When did fill in the blank become a business?
Oh, goody.
I gave you credit. You and Vince Jr.
Me and Vince Jr.?
Yes. So, moving along in the news, also another announcement came out that Peter Capaldi...
You nailed that.
Is going to be no longer Doctor Who.
Yes, this is starting April 15th, season 10 of the current Doctor Who, not the classic. Current Doctor Who. He's going to hang up his cape and leave Doctor Who. I'm sad. I think he could have done it for a few more years. I really like this Doctor. He's maybe my favorite of the new Doctor Who's.
I will say this. He says that he feels that it's time for him to move on to different challenges. No offense to Mr. Capaldi. I had no idea who he was before Doctor Who.
Well, he didn't do a lot. Did you ever see World War Z?
No.
He was in that as, wait for it, Joe, are you ready? A World Health Organization doctor.
Oh, boy.
So he was literally a WHO doctor. That's what he was. How about that, huh? It was foreshadowing. I'm not making that up, by the way.
I wish you were.
But I kind of knew he was leaving because, well, I thought he would leave is because the showrunner, they have like people who don't write every episode, but they write the big episodes, the season premiere and the season finale, you know, the mid episode where things, you know, come to a head to give you a clue. That person, and then he tells people, like, pepper this throughout your episodes. That person was leaving, and a new person was coming on, and that usually means that a doctor is changing because they're like, oh, I want a clear vision. I don't want to have to write for someone you created and get into that. I want to create my own doctor from whole cloth. So I kind of felt he was going to go, but I feel he had two or three more. I felt he had a bunch more years in him because he was a fan since he was a kid. At least I get another season of him.
I hope so for you.
What? For me, that's all that matters.
Right. So, in other Doctor Who news, in addition to next month's Long Beach Comic Expo, alongside of it, they're going to be doing something called the Gallifrey One, which is a which is going to be a, like, I guess it was a previous gathering of Doctor Who fans, but now it's part of this comic book convention as its own separate convention.
Right. I know of Gallifrey One, but...
Right. And it's just interesting to see that they are now doing Doctor Who conventions again, where I think it was a year or two ago when Wizard was trying to do them, but it was less a convention. It's like, hey, we're going to get one of the Doctors, put them in a room, and you can go say hi to them.
It was basically the two of the modern ones, Matt Smith and David Tennant, and they were like, oh, we're just doing this convention, and all it is a meet and greet, autograph, and a sign, a photo op, and it's just going to be those two, which I'm surprised with not just like other stars didn't become more of a thing. Like, we're not even gonna, we're just, forget the Blackjack and the comics. It's gonna be just the Walking Dead actors, you know. I'm gonna start my own con, so I'm waiting to see more of this. I don't know why it hasn't happened more.
Right, and that's kind of part of the reason why I bring that up, is because Doctor Who is, you know, as big in the United States as it is anywhere else currently. You know, or at least has been for the last several years, kind of more permeating into the popular culture. And here it is, the fact that it's going to have its own separate convention alongside the Long Beach Comic Expo.
I just hope it doesn't siphon away all the fans from the Long Beach Comic Expo, because you know how big Doctor Who, how Doctor Who draws. They draw checks is what happens.
I don't know if they draw... Do they draw pounds? Is that a thing?
They do drop shillings, I think.
Right, and
they're
again,
shilling drawers.
And I keep saying it's part of, but it's not part of. It's like running against it.
Right, it's kind of like across the street.
Yeah.
And tomorrow you can ask somebody about English money if you want.
Nope. I'm okay.
All right.
Does it have a picture of a goose on it?
No, that smells like syrup. That's Canadian.
Oh, okay. Oh, maybe my friend this goose will change your mind.
That's right. You know what? If it's, you know, maybe this gaggle will change your mind. Because that would be a bunch of money, because a group of geese is a gaggle. You get it? I love when I have to explain them.
Yep. So, speaking of that convention, that's not until next month. This weekend, it's another light week of conventions. The only real one going on is in Atlanta. Kind of a mid to lower tier comic book convention. The only real big name guest there is Paul Jenkins.
No.
Other than that, you know, it looks like it's a regular, you know, held in the ballroom of a Marriott sort of thing. But we'll have the links to it there if you're in the greater Atlanta area and you got nothing doing this weekend.
Sounds like a plan. Road trip.
Well, if you are taking a road trip and you need something to listen to while you're on said road trip, of course, check out all the shows in the soon-to-be-named network. Such shows as this one, Long Box Heroes After Dark, Profane Arguments, Puzzle Warriors 3, Prodigal Sons Podcast, Podvocacy, Fresher in Parlance, and Talkin' Gimmicks.
That's a lot of shows.
It certainly is. And anytime one of those shows go up live, be sure you could find out when they go up, except for sometimes I forget our shows, because, you know, I take us for granted.
Well, who runs the Soon to Be Nay Network site? Is that Leopold, our employee?
Some schmuck. The same guy who got fired over two Doctor Who stories getting involved in this week's episode.
Oh, boy.
His head's on the chopping block.
Well, hopefully he'll regenerate.
Oh, I hope not. So anytime any of those shows go live, you can certainly check them out there. There will be more and more information there, and there's allegedly a new show coming to the network. Who knows? I'm kept in the dark on things that happen on this network.
Okay, I'm going to have to write that down.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead. Because if you're in the dark, I'm on the dark side of the moon.
Right. So, you know, with the show notes, we would be remiss to mention the sales that are going on. Digital sales, if that's your provocation for getting books. And I know I mispronounced that horribly, but I don't even care. Zenoscope has their Wonderland / Grim Fairy Tale stuff on sale. And, you know, if that's your bag, by all means, check it out. Marvel has a bunch of their X-Men Legacy / Legion stuff available. And I guess it's because maybe they announced like a date that the Legion TV show is going to be airing.
Right.
And the key one in there for me is Prelude to Age of Apocalypse, which is the first time that I was introduced to Legion, Charles Xavier's crazy son.
See, I don't even know Legion that well.
Mm-hmm. And last but not least, a new independent company, Aftershock, is having a sale half price on all of their single issues. There's a lot of good stuff in there from a lot of really good creators. I recommend to you, listener, Super Zero by Jimmy Palmiotti and Amanda Connor, as well as Captain Kid by Mark Waid and Tom Payer.
Big names.
I get the big names. There's stuff in here from Garth Ennis, from Ray Fox, from Paul Jenkins, aforementioned. Lots of big-name creators doing creator-owned stuff for this new company. So all their stuff, like I said, is on sale. Mm-hmm. And the sale ends next week. And like I said, all the links to that will be in the show notes, along with all the digital freebies that are available. Nothing new. We're currently in that weird period where the previous Marvel ones are still listed there, but they're no longer free, and they haven't put the new ones up yet.
Maybe a big Valentine's Day sale will be coming up soon.
Oh, there you go. That's something that comic book companies have done to cater to people in relationships who read comic books, possibly.
There you go.
So let's get into what we read from this past week, sir. Let's start off with the book that we are both most looking forward to coming out, and that would be Saga number 42.
Mm-hmm.
Written by Brian K. Vaughan with art by Fiona Staples. Again, it's in the middle of a storyline, so we have to tread carefully. Actually, this is the end of the current story arc. This is that great part of the Time in Fables where they take 3 months off to let you stew with what happened at the end of this issue.
You mean Saga?
What did I say?
Fables.
Fables. Oh, my goodness. I'm not editing that out. Saga.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the end of this current storyline. The war is going on. They're trying to escape. The little animal people don't want to leave because they say that they've been saved before. Alana is trying to convince them to do so, and they are under attack while they're trying to leave.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a casualty.
Yes, there is. And this is one of the saddest books I've read in a long, long time. And I'm just going to say that this book has a bunch of black pages that should make me very, very angry for buying a book with black pages.
That's a lot of wasted ink.
But as I turned each blank black page, I cried a little harder.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I have to say, I really think the thing that they did that Fiona Staples and Brian K. Vaughan came up with, like the way this book ends, was the way they did it became very powerful. And somebody even pointed out to me that not only are there blank black pages, the back cover is black. So at no point do you get any more after that point. And I'm like, this works very well. Very, very well. And I want to see. I totally want to see where this goes. Obviously, I'm going to say something blasphemous about Saga. Uh-oh. I thought this last storyline, just the beginning of it, started to plateau. And I was getting a little bored. I was like, I want to see things move along. And then they go and do like all this stuff to me in this issue and the last couple of issues. And I'm like, okay, I'm back. I'm back.
And again, we're kind of at a point in Saga where, for me at least, it's not like it's bad or anything, but it's just consistently this good story, good to great story. And it's a book that you could very easily at this point take for granted.
I agree, but here's the thing where it's better than it's good. It's okay. It's better than most every comic, but the bar has been set really high for me on this book.
Right.
So I'm not saying I was like, oh, this book is terrible and I'm going to put it away. I'm just like, okay, I just felt like for about three or so, maybe four issues, Saga was spinning its wheels, which is rare for a Brian K. Vaughan book. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, oh, it was just getting a running start is what uh-huh. So I was like, okay. Do you see what I'm trying to say? It's like when people say something's overrated, you're like, no, I'm not saying it's bad. I just don't think it's as good as everyone is saying. Not that I think that way with Saga. It's when you say, oh, this wasn't, you know, I thought this was just okay. It was like, people go crazy. I'm like, no, okay for Saga is still, you know, Pulitzer Prize winning.
Right, and I think for me, it was just the realization right now that this is the end of a story arc, because I was doing the math in my head, because they stick to that six issue to the trade sort of formula, and I'm doing the math, and I'm like, is this the last issue? Is it not the last issue of this current story arc? And I should have known from all those black pages, but apparently if you got the digital version of this, you got those same black pages as well.
You should have got more because they were cheaper that way.
Right. They could have just put like 100 black pages at the end.
That's right. Which would have been really cool.
You just turn it. There's got to be something. There's got to be something.
That's right. And then you get to, oh, no, just one more black page.
And there was no letter page in this issue as well. That was, I think, key and interesting, you know, like kind of let it sink in.
Right.
Yeah.
It works.
Yeah.
That Brian K. Vaughan, huh? What about him?
Yeah.
I think he's going somewhere.
It's like he knows what he's doing when it comes to these comics.
That's right. People should get to notice his stuff soon.
But again, a very good issue. Just, you know, wanted to throw it out there. Not saying Saga is bad by any stretch of the imagination, but it's fallen into its formula. But it's a great formula. It's a formula that works. A great man once said, copy an A, get an A, but when it's your own stuff that you're copying from, but it's not like he's copying things. Anyway, I'm going around a way to, I guess, try to sound like I didn't like it, but I did like it.
You're succeeding in confusing me, just saying.
Good. I'm glad. I'm glad I'm not the only one confused.
Oh, I'm as confused as a baby raccoon.
So what are we going to talk about next?
I'm gonna say we go with Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps number 13. Is that okay?
Absolutely.
Basically, after the large storyline with Brainiac and Larfleeze and everything that went on last week, or last storyline, this is a down issue to take care of things, where it's told from Tomar Rees' people, which I always call them like the Zudarians. I'm not sure if that's correct, but the characters that have the beak and the fin on their head, and it's told in the future. It's a bedtime story about how the Green Lanterns saved their planet, and went on to do more things and save the planet many times, and how they inspire people. And the reason I wanted to talk about this was because I believe that a lot of superhero comics have fallen into a rut. Especially during the New 52, it's like, oh, we need, you know, darker stories. We need this. We need that. And this, to me, was one of the most inspirational stories for superheroes that I have read in a long, long time, about like how these people look up to the Green Lanterns, and when they see the green light in the sky, it's a beacon of hope and a beacon of, you know. And to me, it's everything, with the exception of the few darker heroes, what a superhero should be. And this nails it beyond belief. Like, I was like reading this going, my God, I feel so good about superheroes reading this book. When did that happen? I don't know. I might have to go read some, you know, murdering, neck-snapping superheroes.
When did that happen with a DC book?
What?
Like that, to get that sort of feeling from a DC book. I know it's been a long time for a Green Lantern book, and, you know, Todd kind of got me back on a Green Lantern after I'd fallen out of it for a little while after Geoff Johns had left, and I tried a bunch of the things that it just wasn't grabbing me, and this really grabbed me, and the initial hook, of course, being that the first story arc was a Sinestro story, and I love me some Sinestro, and, you know, as Todd mentioned, this is a story that takes place 60 years in the future. And we're kind of getting a preview of what some of the future Green Lantern adventures are going to be. Mm-hmm. And I'm always a sucker for that pastiche in a comic book.
Right. Me too.
Because you're like, oh, let me see who's here and who's there and who's not around. Who are they fighting? What are they doing? What's going on? Like, it looks like we're going to get another War of the Light, it looks like. We're going to start getting a lot of the other color Green Lanterns back into things. And, you know, the main takeaway from this is, and again, I forget, I don't have the issue in front of me, but the person telling the story to the two grandchildren specifically mentions that these emotions that power these other rings, essentially the evil rings, she doesn't come right out and say it, but your fear, your greed, your rage, these are the emotions, these are the parts of you that you don't have to work at. They're just right. Kind of, it's just kind of what happens to you as a normal whatever you are. Mm-hmm. But it's the power of will to overcome that emotion associated with that that powers the Green Lantern. That is the one that is the most powerful because that's the one that you have to work the hardest at.
Right, which I think is a very interesting, you know, take on all this. When I thought that the whole, like, you know, light thing and anything that you could do with it has been taken as far as it can, like, Venditti's like, maybe I could do a little bit more with it. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
And in there, where you're talking about the future stuff, there's a, and I don't mean power ring as in the power rings that the colored lanterns have, like, you know, green, yellow, but there's the from Earth, you know, the crime syndicate.
Yep.
Something's going to happen with the power rings. That's the character's name. I'm interested in
I noticed that logo and I couldn't quite place it because I'm not as familiar with those characters.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So I'm like, okay, is there going to be something up with them? And are they going to be like an anti-Green Lantern core or something? I don't know. I just, like I said, I love the book. And I love the fact that it's told as a monster story to kids at bed, but the Green Lanterns are the heroes. Do you know what I mean? I'm like, I just love that. I think it's a nice way to convey. It's like, oh, the children are scared. Well, let's, you know, calm their nerves and send them to sleep by mentioning the Green Lanterns and how I love. And I just think it was great. I think that, you know, like, we need more of this, especially after the way the DC universe has especially been.
Absolutely. And as Todd mentioned, this is a really good issue. I'm glad that I'm back on board for Green Lantern, and I do have you, of course, to thank for that.
As you should.
Yes. The other book that we are going to talk about is another DC book, and that is The Flash number 15, written by Josh Williamson with art by Carmine DiGiandiomenicio.
Nailed it.
Not even close. Last issue was the return of the Rogues to Central City, and now this is them doing a caper in Corto Maltese. And the Flash has to run halfway around the world to stop them. What are the Rogues up to? What are they stealing? Why are they stealing it? We still don't know what their greater plan is. But I think in this issue, we get to see it is a little bit more nefarious than we were led to believe last issue.
Yep. And the thing that I love about this is because now we're getting into full Rogue mode. And each time we do, I get giddier and giddier. And this, with Flash coming to stop the Rogues are working together and everything's going on. And I love I have to give Williamson credit because this book fooled me a couple of times.
Okay.
And I like when you do things like that. It's like, you know, the Rogues are like, well, this was our plan. No, wait, fooled you. this was our plan. And it's like all the cliche things that Flash could do to fight the Rogues come back to be like, yeah, we're not as dumb as people think we are. And the Rogues' plan, like you said, isn't what it is, what it seems to be. And when you find out why they did the heist in Corto Maltese, I'm like, God, I love the Rogues. I've missed them so much. so much. And I'm glad they're back doing what Rogues do.
And, of course, you know, I didn't go back and read the issue a second time to see if the clues show up any earlier than when we are first made aware of them.
Mm-hmm.
But having not read The Flash, you know, obviously this current run, but not in some time, is this relationship between Golden Glider and Mirror Master something new?
I think it is new. Because the Golden Glider's love was the top back in the day.
Right, that I remember.
And then she was dead for a while in pre-New 52.
Right, because she was killed by Chilbane, right?
Yes, and then Captain Cold got her revenge. If only, you know, there was a good issue to discuss about that. But, this is kind of new, and also they're kind of making the Mirror Master, because they even say he has, you know, the power to control mirrors when he's not looking in them, which comes from, like, the recent Flash TV show.
Yeah.
Where that Mirror Master's very vain, so I think they're trying to go with that here. And this doesn't seem like the coke-sniffing Scottish Mirror Master that I like.
Right.
And I think they might even mention that this is Sam Scudder earlier on. So yeah, this is all new water to me, unless in the New 52, when I didn't read it, Mirror Master and Golden Glider were an item.
Right, and that's why I asked, because I thought I wasn't sure if you were or were not reading those issues.
I was buying them, but I wasn't reading them, if that makes any sense.
I tell you, man, more power to you doing something like that. If I'm buying... If I'm buying it, I'm reading it, you know what I mean?
But I... Well, let's just say they were gifted to me. So they were gifted to me.
Nudge, nudge, wink, wink. I get you.
Right. So they were just put in a box with my Flash collection to keep it going. And here's a humble brag, you know, just back to before Showcase 4, I have a couple issues. So I wanted to keep it going. What can I say?
There was a time where I had the crazy pipe dream. I know... our local retailer, Dave at Comics in the Green, doesn't he have the full run of Amazing Spider-Man?
Yes, he does, right. Including an Amazing Fantasy 15.
Right. That was, at one time, my goal, to try to get that.
Good luck with that.
Yeah. I have, like, from 300.
Oh.
Right. Now, again, I have, but the problem is, there are those really bad issues that J.M. Straczynski did,
right,
that will never be part of my collection.
So you'll never have a complete
collection. Right, I'll never have it. Once I got to that part, and I'm like, well, I'm not going to get those. You know, this book is so bad, I'm not reading my favorite character. I could give up the ghost of getting the full complete run, but I do have, like, a good chunk of the non-super expensive issues from, like, 200 to 300.
There you go. Yeah. So you're almost home. That's all you gotta do. You have to do is get Amazing Fantasy 15 to $199.
Right.
How hard can that be?
Right, and those are literally a dime a dozen.
That's right. Oh, don't for... You know what? I'm sorry, maybe not. You have to get a few annuals in there. That might put you over the top. Boy, I'm glad I did. You know what? And I'm gonna. This is more bragging, but I'm glad I pulled the trigger on Flash years and years ago.
Right.
Because I took my Silver Age Flash collection is in two short boxes, with the exception of some key issues that are, you know, off on their own, so I know where they are at all times. And I took the short box in, which was the first half of the Silver Age, couple of Golden Age issues, and was like, hey, I just kind of want, and I bought crappy issues because I didn't have a lot of money except for a few key issues. And I was like, can we kind of like get just like, you don't even have to look at all of them and go page by page, but get an idea. And when I found out what like the first couple of key issues were worth, mm-hmm, I very gently put that box back in my truck and came home. That's all I'm going to say. I was like, holy crap, if I ever need a new car, here we go.
There you go.
Mm-hmm. Oh, sorry, I had to get that out.
I think the closest I have to anything of that nature is the quote-unquote full run of Walking Dead single issues.
You have number one?
Well, okay. I don't have number one. I have I have first printings of issue 7 and up, right?
Mm-hmm.
And remember the first time when they did reprints of Walking Dead and it was Walking Dead Weekly?
Yep, those are still worth money.
Those are what I have as my 1 through 6, and those are still worth money. Not like actual first prints, but, no. You know, those aren't chump change.
Well, maybe if you sell those, you could get $150 to $199 on Spider-Man.
There you go. I think just the first appearance of Hobgoblin would set me back quite a bit.
Maybe that's what you'll get for Christmas, the first appearance of Hobgoblin.
Highly unlikely. So that covers everything that we read from this past week. Let's get into what we're looking forward to coming out this week. As we do every week, if you head over to longboxheroes.com, every Tuesday around 5:30 Eastern time or so, we put up the pull post, which is a link to all the books that come out this week, whether you get your books in print, whether you get them digitally, however it is that you get your books, know what's coming out, be forewarned, be forearmed, and be ready to back up the Brinks truck sometimes. Todd, we are currently in a state, just 1 month into the calendar year 2017, where you are getting more books than I am.
Oh, is that a good thing or a bad thing?
I don't know. It's a thing.
Mm-hmm.
It seemed like last year, every week was like, oh, well, Joe's got more books. Joe's got more books. Joe's got more books.
Well, now we know. Now we know for exacties right here.
Right. And, right, so we do the tally of how many books we're getting, and we also attempt to pick what the other is most looking forward to coming out this week. Todd has the lead with 3 correct guesses. I only have 1 correct guess, sadly. And looking at your list, you're not going to trick me with that Captain Atom book,
mm-hmm.
like you did before.
Right.
I am going to guess the book you were most looking forward to coming out this week is Darth Maul number 1.
It is not. It is Batman 16.
Oh.
The start of a new storyline after that 2-part Catwoman storyline.
Gotcha.
Batman is slowly becoming my favorite superhero book on the market, with the exception of Detective, which flops back and forth. But Batman's, I don't know, I like the singleness of the Batman, not the team. I'm a sucker for a good Batman book, and I won't get into my anti-Snyder tirade, so. But.
Oh, the worm has turned on that one, huh?
Yes. Just not digging his stuff, even his All-Star. But I'm looking over yours, and I'm going to guess, is it Darth Maul number 1?
It is Darth Maul number 1.
Oh my goodness, I am taking the lead! Can you even catch up before the end of the year now?
I might be able to. I might have to break your legs.
Oh, just work the good one. Don't work the bad one.
Just tell me which one it is and I'll know.
Okay. The other one.
So, yes, Todd is in the lead. Yes, Darth Maul. I typically would not go for a Star Wars comic book based from the movies that don't exist. However, I do have a soft spot in my heart for the one good thing that came out of those 3 bad movies, which was Darth Maul. And I like Cullen Bunn as a writer, so I will definitely be checking this out.
I want a prequel, the guy who is the slave owner of Annie, Anakin.
Watto, the junk shop yeah. owner?
I want to get the comic. He sounds like these. Oh, Annie. That's what I want.
Right.
That's the prequel comic that I want, where he's just this, you know, gas bag with wings. Just that's literally what he was.
Who's also immune to Jedi mind tricks, by the way.
Well, no, people, because he was strong-willed. Stupid people. Remember they said, because But Jabba was immune to mind tricks. Luke tried it on him. He did it on Bib Fortuna, and Bib was like, I take you to see Jabba now. And he was like, hey, you'll release the... And he's like, hey, I know the Jedi mind trick. I'm Jabba the Hutt. It's not worked on me before.
And then Jabba had an established history in this universe. Watto is a weird, winged, snouted man who owns a junk shop. I don't believe he is on the same mental acumen as Jabba the Hutt. That's just me.
Well, that's because he hadn't had the step up that Jabba had.
Ah.
He hasn't had the luxuries that Jabba's had. Hutts are well known for their, you know, for having money and running things.
Don't get me started on the shabby way that poor Bib Fortuna was treated in that movie.
No, he was terrible. I think the pig guards don't get a fair
The Gamorrean shape. Guards?
The Gamorrean guards. They don't, because Luke comes in and he puts the axes up to their throats to push them out of the way. And I'm like, poor Gamorrean, they're just a hardworking security guy. They're mall cops is basically what they are. Gamorrean guards are mall cops. They don't even get a gun.
One gets thrown down in the Sarlacc pit. His friends are all upset. Everybody else laughs at them.
Yes, they're like the lizard people in the Flash Gordon movie, the 80s Flash Gordon movie.
Yep.
Just they get no respect. They should team up Gamorrean guards and the lizard people in the Flash Gordon movie and take over the galaxy.
Good luck with that.
Good luck. It's not easy being green.
Ugh. Something something sipping tea, is that a thing?
I don't know.
Do you know what that is?
I have no idea. Should I write that down?
Nope. Don't write it down. Nope.
All right. I won't.
All right. So while you're over at longboxheroes.com, be sure to check out everything else that we have over there, which includes but is not limited to past episodes of this show, past episodes of After Dark. When the new episode of After Dark, Roman numeral 1 of Gallifrey Birds go up, Todd is going to discuss in depth the Great American Bash 1989 from Turner Crockett Promotions, and I'm going to discuss the very first episode and a salvageable story arc by admission of fans of the first Doctor from Doctor Who.
Oh boy, the Aztecs.
The Aztecs. And you'll be quite surprised on both of our takes on it, I think.
They're hot takes.
Right.
Hottest of hot takes.
When that episode goes up, it'll be over at longboxheroes.com. If you're not already subscribing to the show by whatever podcatcher you're using. Ugh, I'm an RSS feed man myself. Oh, write down your perfect podcast.
My perfect podcast?
Yeah, write that down.
Okay, I'm writing my perfect pod. I don't know what that means, but right. Okay.
So you could also check out past pull posts. You could check out past editions of Todd and Joe Have Issues. You can click the little store button to purchase one of our shirts or stickers with our fancy logo on it. Or you could click the Amazon banner across the top of the page. Purchase to your heart's content. And whatever you purchase will not cost you a penny more. But they are going to take a few pennies off the back end for advertising fees. Since we were the ones nice enough to tell you that Amazon exists.
That's right. Before us, everybody thought it was a river. That's it.
Right. Some notable purchases this past week was people purchased a Samsung stereo headset for a Galaxy and Ooh. Also a Panasonic Ergo Fit earbud headphones.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm guessing it's listeners of this show who just want the show to sound so much more better, to really hear all those pops and key clacks that we have throughout all the lip-smacking length of the show.
That's right, so you can hear my beating heart thump out.
And be sure to also follow the show on Twitter at Longbox Heroes. Be sure to follow Todd on Twitter at Roker the Joker. Follow me on Twitter at Joe Sposto. Has there been any new art attacks?
Yes, there has. And it was, I'm looking right now. I knew I should have this set up, but I'm not as media savvy as you.
That's correct.
There was a Havoc sketch by Clayton Crane sent in by Jesse616 on Twitter, also Jesse A. DeJong.
Oh, okay, I know that guy.
Right, so he sent that in, so yay! Very nice, too.
Let me look that. Look at that. Oh, yeah, that's real cool. That's some nice ink in there.
You probably didn't retweet it because you never retweet my art attacks. You don't even look anymore.
I do when I see them.
Well, what do you have me muted, blocked? What is that?
There, I just retweeted it. No, I'm not DJ. Come on.
Oh, boy.
And
what, sure I said I said something about Lynch again, didn't I?
And also be sure to check out the show or the network Twitter at STBN Network, soon to be named Network on Twitter. And every time a new episode of any of the shows in the network goes up, it gets tweeted out, except for our shows, because I always forget to do our show.
You hate us.
It's not that I hate us. It's just that everybody else is more of a priority.
That's right. What do we need priorities for?
I got too many irons in the fire. If only you knew the nonsense that I fill my life with when everybody else in the house is sleeping.
You watching Doctor Who episodes.
Well, exactly. It was like this past week, the Royal Rumble's over. It's like, well, I could go to bed. I do have these two episodes of Doctor Who I have to watch.
Oh, two, wow.
I was blazing through them. I had to get them watched for the show, man.
I stretched my 9 hours of the Great American Bash out to a couple of nights.
All right. We're saving all that for After Dark. You could check all that out over there. Let's get into this week's Todd and Joe Have Issues, my good man.
Mm-hmm.
So this was a pick by me. Not a very well-known issue of a comic book. Daredevil number 360, written by Carl Kessel with art by Kerry Nord. And as I mentioned in the post about this, and I mentioned when we talked about it last week to set this issue up, this is one of the first things that I put together when we got this fancy website, because I care about this issue that much.
You do.
The cliff notes, the boilerplate, if you will, for this is, all the heroes are gone because of the Heroes Reborn event that is still going on today?
No, that's over with.
Oh, that's over with. Okay. So most of the heroes are gone, but not all of the villains are gone. And the Absorbing Man, who is a Thor-level villain, decides to attack New York, and the only person who can stop him is Daredevil, who, outside of having some radar senses and some supreme agility and a billy club, he ain't no as strong as no Thor.
But he has some martial arts.
Right, he does have some martial arts. But when you're fighting a guy who could turn into the hardest substances around, like brick or stone or anything, those martial arts ain't going to do nothing for you.
Or even into newspaper.
So, I love this issue. I got nothing else to say about it. Todd, what did you think of this, probably having read this for the first time?
I read this for the first time, and like I said, this reminds me of such classic issues as Daredevil fights the Hulk, Spider-Man fights the Juggernaut. It's like, oh, I'm out of my weight class. Way, way out of my weight class. Now, to be honest, Daredevil is not one of my favorite characters. We all know this. So I wasn't blown away by this story because it's one of those stories that I have seen, like I said before, but I found it interesting. And the thing that I found most interesting about it was that Foggy has two moms.
Yes, that was a new wrinkle that was added during this run.
Right, because it was the side, side story going on.
The B story, sure.
The B story. And I'm like, oh, I'm actually spoiler alert, Daredevil beats Absorbing Man. I kind of figured that was coming. But I actually want to see what's going on with these two people who raised Foggy and were fighting and what all that was about. So I found that to be actually the most interesting part. But it was cool to see how, you know, the ideas that Daredevil has to take down an Absorbing Man and the whole thing with the diamond and, you know, they have weaknesses, I thought was really cool. The one thing that I thought was funny was I don't know why when he touches newspaper, he becomes one sheet thin, because shouldn't he be still shaped like the Absorbing Man, but made all of paper? If that makes any sense.
Creative.
Do you know what
license.
I'm trying to ask? What?
I said creative license.
I didn't like it. That kind of made me mad. But no, it was one of those like, well, when he's diamond, he's still thick. When he's metal, he's still thick. But paper was cool to see him get shot and be like, I'm okay because I'm paper, and change into something else. I always found the absorbing man's powers a little like vague. Like I know he can absorb things, but this kind of helped out with like, he's like, oh, I lost a hand. He's like, I can put it back on and reform. Or if I lose pieces, I was like, oh, okay, so that's, it's kind of cool. I learned about that. But in the end, you know, everything works out all right. And I wasn't sure what was going on with Karen Page's job for a second, because I wasn't sure. I guess are they lovers at this time, or does she just know his secret identity?
She knows his secret identity.
But they're not in a relationship at this point?
No.
Okay, I thought maybe they were, so I wasn't sure.
Right. But I enjoyed it. They're always kind of intertwined, you know?
Mm-hmm. Is she still alive?
No.
Right, because wasn't she involved in, like, the adult film industry and got killed because she knew who he was or something?
Those are two unrelated things, but yes. During the Frank Miller run, she left to go to Hollywood, ended up in adult films, and sold the fact that Matt Murdock was Daredevil for a hit of hair, like for, you know, a hit of heroin.
Drugs, right, gotcha.
Right, and then comes back, the redemption, everything else like that. And then during the Kevin Smith run on Daredevil, which is shortly after this, we're only about a year or so away from that in this issue, Bullseye kills her, and then that was the end of her. She's never been back since. That's been almost some 20 years.
All right, so she wasn't in the Mark Waid run at all.
No.
All right, cool beans.
So that was this week's Todd and Joe Have Issues. What is next week's Todd and Joe Have Issues?
Because this weekend, I believe it is the 5th of February, is the 30th anniversary. Oh my God, I'm so old. 30th anniversary of Justice League 1 from 1987, the, you know, Guy Gardner, Mr. Miracle, Dr. Fate run. That first issue is going to be the issue that we discuss next week to honor the anniversary.
Now, I know this is a book that you could probably quote verbatim.
Mm-hmm.
I'm kind of close. Are you going to reread this?
I will reread this. I just don't know if I'm going to reread this in one of my 7 single issues. My 2 different versions of the soft cover, the original 1987 one, or the one they put out a few years ago, the hardcover, or the big hardcover that someone gave me as a gift that has the first 24 issues pressed into a hardcover. I don't know which is signed by all 3 creators. I don't know which way I'm going to read it.
I say read them all.
Oh my goodness. That would be like many times.
To see if they changed anything.
Yes. I do have a crazy Justice League International collection.
Yes, you do. So that covers up the main part of the show. We are going to get into discussions of both The Flash and Legends of Tomorrow in TV Talk. The name is stolen there from Podvocacy, so if you have not watched these shows or do not care to hear about these shows, we bid you adieu. Thank you very much for listening to episode 331 of Longbox Heroes, and we'll give you like 2 seconds to get out before we get into discussion of those TV shows.
Mm-hmm.
So, both these shows are back from their winter hiatuses. We're going to start with The Flash. Since both shows are now on Tuesday nights, The Flash comes first, followed by Legends of Tomorrow, so that's the order in which we'll discuss them. If there is an outcry, I guess, maybe we'll throw Riverdale into the mix as well.
We could. I would watch it.
Since it's new and it just started and it's easy for me to kind of dive into. Todd's already watched the first episode. I have not gotten a chance to watch it. But if there is a demand for us to watch it, then we will.
Should have probably put that before the time everybody left.
No, listen, this is the part where people, you know.
I gotcha. I'm giving you a gentle ribbing. Don't be mad.
Yeah. You know how I feel about that.
I know. I've seen the Never mind. Go ahead.
Right. So we start off the episode of The Flash with Barry still having the knowledge from his accidental time jump that he witnesses Iris be killed by Savitar. And he, of course, is trying to keep this knowledge secret because he does not want to alter the timeline, but he does want to prevent this from happening, but he doesn't want to tell anyone that that's what he's doing. So, of course, that causes him to start alienating people, specifically Wally.
Mm-hmm.
He finally does tell everyone what's going on, including Iris. Iris, who is all sad, of course, knowing that she only has a few months to live. But Barry and everyone are trying their best to make sure that it does not happen, as they use Cisco's vibing power to go back to that moment to see if there's anything that Barry could ascertain from that moment that could clue them in, that if they could stop those things from happening, then maybe they could stop Savitar from killing Iris.
And he sees in his vision that he was watching a news bulletin with the crawl across the bottom of the screen. So they have a bunch of things, which basically to me relates to Rip from the comics, Rip Hunter's chalkboard.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Where they're like, okay, if we could change these things, but they're not obviously the big things like in the DC universe where it was like multiple different characters and everything. So I just found it funny that they're using Rip's chalkboard, not on Rip Hunter's show, but on The Flash.
So what did you think of this this issue or this episode coming back?
I was not a big fan of this episode. One, I'm not a fan. Now, granted, Barry's, you know, banging on Wally like, oh, he's not ready. But it's because of the Iris reasons. He doesn't want, you know, this timeline to come out. But I also don't like Wally's attitude at times. I don't know. It just seems... He reminds me too much of, like, the grumpy Flash from the Wally days early when I wrote my letter. But I don't know. There's something about Wally's character that grates me. And then on top of that, it's like, you know what? I've learned, again, not to keep secrets from people. So we're going to tell everybody except Joe. We're going to keep the secret from Joe. And I'm like, didn't we just discuss that secrets are bad? Like, it never works out in this group when we have a secret. And he goes, we're going to keep it. And Plunder, to me, I was not a fan of Plunder as the villain. Like, you know, the pirate guy with the gun. And
right, he seemed like things. Almost an afterthought.
Right, and there was no explanation. Like, granted, it could come down the line. But it's like, oh, this guy just has a future gun. That, like, we're good, you know, Cisco's going to look at it, and it does all these things. And I'm kind of like, okay, I'm not a big fan of Plunder. I don't get it. But I want to see where it goes. And there was a couple of times where I felt bad for Iris as she was figuring out she was, you know, what was going to happen to her. And I did like, I do think that they're going to change all the, like, they're going to change this future. Wally caught Plunder instead of Barry, this and that. I think the one thing they're not going to be able to change is that Star Labs goes under. Or not Star Labs, Star Labs Museum goes under.
Yes.
And they're going to change it to the Flash Museum. That's my prediction on
that. Ooh, I like that.
And the other thing that I had a problem with, one real quick thing, is, you know, when Wally catches Plunder and they're like, hey, everybody, you're on TV, Kid Flash, look. He's like, hey, everybody, I'm Kid Flash. I'm like, how about doing the thing with the voice that Barry does? Barry, show him that before he's making. Though I do think maybe he will be outed as Wally, a la the comics where Wally's public identity was known and Barry's wasn't. So I hope it goes that way, because I hope that makes people figure out who Wally is, because I can't stand when they don't do the voice in public.
That's a good point to bring up, but obviously with one of the identities being known and the other one not being known could cause problems, of course, but that's an interesting idea or take or otherwise if that's the way they decide to go. I like this episode. Maybe it was just because I missed the show while it was away. Like I said, Plunder was less of a threat than anything, of more of a reason to move the plot along, but I liked them setting up a plan. I liked all the characters are back, and I liked what they had set up.
just I didn't hate the episode. I just wasn't a big fan.
Fair enough. We'll be talking about next the most recent episode on next week's show.
Right.
Let's move over to Legends of Tomorrow, also back from their hiatus.
Right.
The gang are continuing to try to find Rip Hunter because he may be out there somewhere. We got the tease at the cliffhanger of the last episode that we saw a couple weeks ago where he was directing some movie or something.
Right.
Or at least a guy who looked like Rip Hunter.
But an American guy.
Right. So they decide to go to the 60s, late 60s specifically, to try to get to him before Damien Dark, which, again, I still hate the spelling of his name, Malcolm Merlyn and Professor Zoom get to him first.
Reverse Flash. Professor Zoom's a different person.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. Reverse Flash. Also,
so confusing.
Also, Professor Stein is trying to take a piece of metal or an antenna out of Heatwave's head using amateur brain surgery. Well, there's a lot that happened in this episode, so go
there,
ahead.
There is a lot, and then there's cameos by people who, well, not the actual person, but George Lucas.
Oh, my goodness.
Who I knew, obviously, that was George Lucas right from the beginning, because somebody was like, oh, well, George Lucas is going to make a cameo, kind of. And so when they saw him, I was like, and Rip's character was telling him that, oh, you have to have a great villain. It was him. But as his story went on, I found it amusing because he decides to leave film school, that it affects both Steel and Adam, because one became interested in history because of Indiana Jones, and the other one became interested in science because of Star Wars. And I was like, actually, I thought that was intriguing. Like, those two movies have had a giant effect on, you know, society. So I found that amusing. And then I thought it got a little weird with the garbage compactor scene and everything. But that's out there. But the whole Rip Hunter being scattered through time, but changing his memory using whatever the drive from the Wave Rider. So he actually believes he is the person that he is. He's the filmmaker in the 1960s. I thought that was, I think that's all right. I want to see where this goes and the whole Spear of Destiny thing. But my big takeaway from this episode is it was a little thing, kind of like I was looking at the Flash Museum in the Flash episode and Wally being his identity being outed. I want to know what Zoom is doing in between, or Reverse Flash is doing in between being around helping Dark and Malcolm Merlyn, because they're like, they're getting their butts handed to him, and Reverse Flash shows up and they're like, where have you been? He's like, hey, I'm here when you need me and I'm never late. And I'm like, he's doing something. I don't know what it is, but it's the most intriguing thing on this show right now.
I think he is laying down his plans because he knows that these guys are going to fail. He's laying up his escape plan, his plan B, for when Damien Dark and Merlyn mess up.
I actually think it's him. This is his mission right before season one of The Flash, where he goes to disintegrate.
Oh, okay.
He knows something bad's going to happen, and he wants to use the Spear of Destiny to alter him being erased from time. That's what he wants it for.
Mm-hmm.
Because he can't kill Flash, because if he kills Flash early, then he can't become Reverse Flash. There's a certain point at he's like, all right, then I can murder you. But I think that's what we're seeing him before we've ever seen him on the Flash TV show. That's my take. And I think we're going to see Captain Cold very, very soon. That's my other thing.
I certainly hope so, because Captain Cold, is, of course, is the best.
Heatwave.
Anyway, so the main crux of this episode is the George Lucas stuff.
Right. You didn't like it, did you? You're a big Lucas fan, though.
Okay. I like Star Wars. I like Indiana Jones. My feelings on George Lucas, the person, notwithstanding, I feel as though they could have did a better job of casting their George Lucas.
Looks just like him. The big beard, hair, he's got it going on.
The beard and wig work in this episode is maybe some of the most shameful things I've ever seen in my entire life. It looked like something out of a British TV show from 1964.
What?
That's how bad it looked.
Well, I don't know. I think he looked exactly like I would expect George Lucas to look like in the 60s.
And the resolution of this, it's not like there's photos that exist of George Lucas from that time frame that they could have referenced, or I don't know, cast an actor who grew a beard.
Are you saying that was a fake beard?
Oh my goodness.
I want you
listen
to give me proof that that was a fake beard. Not just you know, lies and slander.
Listen, I've seen people with fake hair in my day, and I can spot fake hair when I see it.
Oh boy, realist—that's realistic fake hair. Right
oh
there.
My god! And then the resolution—it's like, oh, you know, obviously the way that time works is they do the thing and, they just lose that knowledge, right? It's not like they're wiped from the existence because they would exist whether or not, you know, George right. Lucas makes movies. And then they're trapped in the faux trash compactor, and they essentially just bully him into saying, I'm going to go make some movies, and then all of a sudden they have their powers back.
Well, that's he believed. He wanted to be a director. Though I think the missed opportunity was telling him not to do Crystal Skull. You know, like, George, come here. You're going to do three, and you're going to be tempted. You're going to be tempted to write a fourth. Don't do it.
And they do a little ha-ha at the end. We're like, hey, let's watch this George Lucas movie, Howard the Duck.
Well, she didn't know. She's from the 50s or 60s.
Hey, these guys have been talking about Star Wars and Indiana Jones. He's got four of the one and six of the other. We're not going to count the other two because he had no involvement with the more recent good ones. Hey, we could have done that. Oh, George, are you a little sensitive about people maybe poking fun about how terrible the prequels are?
Listen. Is Howard the Duck that bad?
No, I have a fondness in my heart, and I'm sure if I watched the movie today, it would erase the part of my mind that thinks that that erases the enjoyment that I had as a 12-year-old boy watching that movie.
Wide-eyed. I'd love to see little wide-eyed Joe Sposto in the Howard the Duck theater. Rubbing his hands like, this is the guy who made Star Wars! I can't wait!
I don't think I saw it in Star Wars, or I don't think I saw that in the theaters, but I know for sure when it was on heavy rotation on HBO, I probably watched it every single time that it was on.
Ma, Dad, can I watch HBO tonight? Howard the Duck is on.
No, son, Bachelor Party's on at 8. We gotta watch that instead.
That comedy still holds up.
You don't hear me casting stones at Bachelor Party.
Bachelor Party 2, not so much. But the original Bachelor Party, Tom Hanks' is maybe best film.
Definitely Adrian Zemed's best film.
I don't know. Maybe not. How many films has Adrian Zemed made?
More than you probably think.
Oh. Well, wasn't he in... Well, he has T.J. Hooker under his belt. So.
And Grease 2.
Grease 2, which is one of my friend's favorite movies.
Don't tell me what friend that was.
You know who it is. And you guys have a lot in common.
Oh, no.
Yes, you do.
So let's see. This is what the end of the episode has devolved into.
We've become a couple of Zemed heads.
Grease 2. He had a one episode shot on Bosom Buddies,
because that's where he met Tom Hanks to do Bachelor Party.
Right, he played Sox Palermo on the short lived Flatbush TV show,
Was that a was he a regular or just a guest?
He was the lead. There was six episodes made, and he was in all six episodes.
Oh, he's probably still getting checks off that.
Right. He was in also, he was Frankie Millardo in The Good Time Girls, another short-lived TV show. So then Grease 2, a movie called The Final Terror, which as a horror movie fan, I have no idea what that is.
So it must be good.
Right. Bachelor Party, aforementioned. That led to T.J. Hooker.
What does it?
Right. Then he was mostly a TV actor for that for much of the rest of his career.
Well, listen, sometimes you find your medium and you have to stick with it.
Oh, and here's our connection. In the Star Wars Jedi Starfighter video game, he did the voice of Toth.
Well, that's an important character.
Right. And then more recently, he's playing himself in the upcoming Sharknado 4.
As he should. Who's your favorite Star Wars character? The one that Adrian Zemed voiced in that
video game.
Yeah, that's the important one. Zemed.
Out of steam. And I do want to thank everyone for bearing with us. We're back into TV talk, so these are going to go a little bit longer as well, but not too much longer.
No, we're almost done here.
Was there anything else you wanted to mention or discuss in regards to either The Flash or Legend of Tomorrow?
No, I think that's everything.
I think we've milked those cows for all they're worth.
That's right, that hot wig talk.
If only there was another podcast out there with someone who had experience with wigs.
Oh, my goodness. Don't wig out.
All right.
Should I keep doing wig stuff?
No. We're going to end the show here by saying, for Todd, this is Joe, closing on episode 331 of Longbox Heroes, and we will catch you all here next week.
Remember, be a faucet, not a drain.
Boo!